Series on Shantideva, our current hero of the Dharma. And I'm going to be just taking us into some of his reflections on compassion, on metta, really. But I'm just going to start with a little bit of thinking, a little bit of introduction to, well, how to engage with these teachings from Shantideva, because some of them are very strong, really, very challenging. So I was just thinking back to the introductory course we do, which many of you have been on, and how we just introduce these ideas, which I think most of us find quite easy to get on with, that real satisfaction comes from the inside, not from kind of how we arrange the outside world, and that actually all our attempts to control that are usually disappointing. In fact, this being human business is a difficult thing to do, it's not comfortable. But everything's changing, everything's impermanent, everything's dependent on certain conditions, and when that changes, things change. And that we change, and that means we can grow and change, move towards awakening. And that we're interconnected. We affect each other much more than we think we do. We're not separate from each other. And in a way, you can find these teachings, these ideas, woven into most Buddhist teachings. So our problem really is that our mind, our consciousness, isn't configured like that. We sort of don't really experience the world in that way most of the time. We interpret it differently than that. And so that's why we practice. That's why we practice, to reconfigure our minds. That's why we follow the precepts. That's why we meditate, to train our mind differently. That's why we learn the Buddhist teachings and really look more deeply into our experience to see if they're not a more true description of how things are. And we all have glimpses. We all have intuitions, even, of what is more connected, more open, more beautiful, more satisfying, more sort of expansive than the way we normally operate. And I think those are all much of the same sort of flavour. We might describe them differently. We might say, oh, it was really connected, or it was really spacious, but I think they're all of the same sort of ilk. But I think the way we talk to ourselves about those differs. This is something I've been reflecting on loads lately. Because, we've got different kind of ways of... It's in a way we're looking for something different, so we kind of see it a bit differently or experience it a bit differently. So for me, my most sort of deep and meaningful experiences are all about love. That's what I'm looking for, and that's how I experience my most deep, profound, beautiful moments. And they're about faith. They're about... glimpsing that awakening is possible, and it's possible for me, and that is desirable. That's something I want. But other people talk about it in very different ways. Other people talk about awareness. Badra always talks about awareness. I talk about love. He's always talking about awareness. You know, we've got different kind of vocabulary for it. Dhyajyoti would probably be talking about no self. Other people would talk. Dharmavajri would probably talk about meeting a particular Buddha and just really coming into connection with a Buddha. So there's sort of different ways of describing these experiences. And there's loads of those ways in the Buddhist tradition. I think that's why there are so many teachers with so many different teachings, because people have sort of described it in their own way. So for Shantideva, who wrote... expounded these verses that make up this book, the Bodhicharya Avatara. It's all about the bodhicitta. That's what everything's about, really, for him. This book's like a praise to the bodhicitta in parts. So bodhicitta, it's got these two parts. Bodhi means awakening or enlightenment, and citta means heart-mind. So you can say... bodhicitta is enlightenment mind or awakening heart, or is often translated in our puja, it's translated as the will to enlightenment, which I like because it's got that desire, that movement, it's more active somehow. So the bodhicitta is often described as very active, as like a force, as processes sort of active in the universe. It's something that's not a thing, something, some processes that are beyond our usual small, tight way of operating, the way we kind of cling to this idea of ourselves as something limited. Like processes in motion that can seem as if there's a force through the universe that is beyond us, sort of suprapersonal force working through things. And it can't be appropriated into us as we are, into the small, limited self. We can't own it, but we can experience something of it in those glimpses of beauty, those glimpses of love or awareness or whatever it is that it seems like to you. There's this lovely metaphor for the bodhicitta, which says the bodhicitta is like the moon, so we can't kind of capture the moon, but it's as though we're all pools of water. So whether you're an ocean or a lake or a little puddle, you can reflect the moon. You get that sense of the light sort of touching you. So the underlying ideal motivating Shantideva is the bodhisattva ideal. So it's this very profound sense that we practice out of compassion for all beings. It's not something we're doing just for ourselves. We're doing it because we see that everyone gets into trouble bumping up against reality and expecting it to be differently. And what we all need to do most is take on the truth of things, really reconfigure our minds so that we can open to love and beauty and connection and spaciousness. And so it unites this compassion view of relieving suffering with the wisdom knowledge that in a way we couldn't do it on our own anyway, because we're not separate from each other. Because we're all interconnected, we all influence each other. It's just, we're all kind of partaking in this process of movement together, all influencing each other as we go. But Shantideva is talking from a really profound place, and it can be really hard to take some of the advice in this book, actually. Badra's been talking about really reflecting on it for the last couple of months and just sort of, getting really like, whoa, this is tough stuff to engage with. I've only been looking at it for a week or two recently. I just find it really helpful when I come up against some of these things, though, that seem a bit like, oof, don't know about that, that's really not possible, to remember that, in a way, he's not telling me what to do. Shantideva isn't kind of, he's saying, if you want to train on this path, this is what to do. But really, he's talking to himself. He says so in one of the first verses. He says, I've done this to perfume my own mind. In doing this, the surge of my inspiration to cultivate what is skillful increases. And then he says, and if you're of the same temperament, of the same humours, it'll probably benefit you too. But it's a bit like, well, you might not be as well. There are these different descriptions, these different paths. It might be another teacher suits you better if you're not of the same temperament to him. So they're like verses, it is like he's talking to himself. They're verses to kind of encourage himself, inspire himself to practice more. And he does, he sort of uses the carrot and the stick, he kind of exhorts himself, he threatens himself, he disenchants himself with the things of this world that are ultimately limited, and kind of goes into these raptures of devotion to the possibility of awakening and the desire for that. And he is in a much more deeply awakened perspective than we are most of the time. So he's coming from really knowing deeply there's nothing fixed about us. And he's not fighting with that in the way that I might be when I read some of these verses and kind of go, that's a bit much. So it's an opportunity for us to consider this enlightened perspective, really. It's an opportunity to tune in with that. So I'm just going to take us through just a few verses reflecting on a couple of the themes in the book, that are around compassion, and they're kind of reflections that we sometimes do suggest in the Metta Bhavana, especially the first one I'm going to take us through. So some might move enough from back on my cushions. Do that. So yeah, a few more words. The first theme he brings out is equality of self and other. So he's saying, meditate, reflect on the equality of self and other. So he doesn't mean we're all the same in many respects, that we're all kind of equally clever or kind or good at painting or anything like that. What's equal is how hard it is to be human. Now, we all want to be happier than we are. We all want to be free from suffering, and life isn't always like that, doesn't always allow that. Happiness happens, but it has a way of evaporating, or it's got an edge. Shantideva also says that this life is like honey on a razor's edge. So you've got that sweetness and that pain together very often. So, yeah, he's talking about equality in the sense of this sort of solidarity with the human condition. Solidarity with each other. It's the same for all of us. We all equal in how hard it is to be human, how hard it is to want to be happier than we can arrange life to be. And he's talking about equality. Well, it brings out again this quality of interconnectedness. He uses the analogy of parts of the body. He says, you know, your hands and feet seem separate, but they're all part of one body. So if your foot hurts, your hand rubs it. Or your hand might work to put shoes on your feet to protect them from getting sore when you're walking around on stony ground. You don't go, no, hands are separate from feet, so they're not going to get involved with whether the feet hurt or not. They're all part of the same thing. And so he's saying, consider that we are all part of the body of humanity, if you like. We're all connected, and so it doesn't make sense not to care about each other any more than it makes sense for a hand not to protect a foot. So, yes, let's reflect. So let's just take a minute first to really come present into our body, into our experience again. How it is being here now, sitting here now. Just taking in your contact with the ground and the seat. Sensations of your body. Any sounds you can hear. And feeling the sensations of breathing deep in your body. Connecting with your heart, your emotions, and just dropping in the question, do you want to be happy? Is that true? Do you want to be happier, more satisfied by life? Would you like to be free from suffering? Are you always happy? Are you always free from suffering and stress? Tune in to how you feel, both physically, just notice any sensations in your body. And emotionally, what responses might there be in your heart? And remember, there's nothing wrong with you. It's natural. This is how it is to be human. And think of someone else, someone you know or someone in the room. What do you think? Do they want to be happy and free from stress? Are they always free from stress? What's life like for this person? What responses, sensations, emotions are there now in your body, in your heart? Is this aspect of being human the same for everyone? Are we all the same, united in this? Through time and space, through history, anywhere, has there been anyone who hasn't wanted to be happier than they are? Who has been free from all trouble in life? At first, one should meditate intently on the equality of oneself and others as follows. All equally experience suffering and happiness. I should look after them as I do myself. Just as the body, with its many parts, from division into hands and other limbs, should be protected as a single entity. So too should this entire world, which is divided but undivided in its nature, to suffer and be happy. When happiness is liked by me and others equally, what is so special about me that I strive after happiness only for myself? When fear and suffering are disliked by me and others equally, what is so special about me that I protect myself and not the other? If you think that it is for the person who has the pain to guard against it, a pain in the foot is not of the hand, so why is the one protected by the other? The continuum of consciousness, like a cube, and the combination of constituents, like an army, are not real. The person who experiences suffering does not exist. To whom will that suffering belong? Without exception, no sufferings belong to anyone. They must be warded off simply because they are suffering. Why put any limitation on this? In the same way that the hands and other limbs are loved because they form part of the body, why are embodied creatures not likewise loved because they form part of the universe? Shantideva encourages us, exhorts himself to meditate, is exchange of self and others. So we've done equality of self and others, and he also recommends exchange of self and others. So this is actually a very advanced practice, I would say. It's even more profound. It's really, I mean, he touches on this sort of insight view in the first reflection, but this one really does require seeing through the sort of clinging to a small sense of self, a fixed sense of self, and it really requires deep positive emotion, I would say, deep positivity. I think it's really based in seeing that that our idea of ourself is just an idea, and he's saying, since out of these sort of all these fleeting thoughts and emotions we construct the idea that we exist, well, couldn't we just possess the idea of somebody else, just as, you know, we couldn't be as close and familiar with someone else's fleeting existence? So that's, you know, quite a big ask. And he's also saying, let's just exchange their suffering for our happiness. Let's just find a way to imaginatively engage with swapping those over. So I think just I don't know, even that idea, I think, can take us into sort of overwhelm very easily, or into sort of self-punishment and self-hatred, like, I've got to suffer all the more so that other people can be happier, or something like that, which isn't really what's meant at all. So, yeah, I think this, you know, the sort of depth he takes this to is probably, yeah, a bit much for us to engage with. But I think there are some verses here that we can usefully reflect on and just sort of, yeah, get an inkling of something. He says, when I think, if I give, what shall I enjoy? Such concern for one's own welfare is fiendish. If I enjoy, what shall I give? Such concern for the welfare of others is divine. All those who suffer in the world do so because of their desire for their own happiness. All those happy in the world are so because of their desire for the happiness of others. So let's reflect on that, see if we think that's true. Sensing into your breath again for a couple of breaths, sensations of sitting, breathing, being alive. And remember or imagine a time when you held back from giving. When you noticed you were asked to give or you felt like giving, but you held back from it, perhaps because you were concerned whether you would have enough. Just have a sense of a time, that sort of resistance to giving, that sort of like, oh, if I give that, I won't have it anymore. There won't be enough left for me. Just have that as vividly as you can in your mind. Think where you are and who you're with and what's happening. Tune in to how that makes you feel physically. What sensations do you notice in your body? Tune into how this makes you feel emotionally. What responses do you notice in your heart? Tune into how it makes you feel in relation to the world at large. How do you feel about being in the world? Recalling this time when you held on, didn't give, keeping enough for yourself. Maybe you can come up with two or three words that describe some of how you feel. Or an image. And now bring to mind, remember or imagine a time when you felt abundant or contented with your life, or lucky, grateful. And imagine giving something to someone. At a time when things are turning out well for you, or you're just satisfied with how things are in your life generally. Imagine responding to someone, giving something, or just responding with kindness, being helpful. Imagine as vividly as you can who you're with and where, what's going on. What would you like to give? Tune in again to how this makes you feel physically, what sensations are in your body now. Tune in to how it makes you feel emotionally, what responses you can feel in your heart. And recalling or imagining giving from abundance. Tune into how that makes you feel in relation to the world at large. Let's see if there's an image or a few words that sum up, describe how you're feeling. Whoever longs to rescue quickly both himself and others should practice the supreme mystery, exchange of self and other. If even slight danger causes fear because of over-fondness for oneself, who would not detest that self like a fear-inspiring enemy? What wise person would want such a self, protect it, worship it, and not see it as an enemy? Who would treat it with regard? If I give, what shall I enjoy? Such concern for one's own welfare is fiendish. If I enjoy, what shall I give? Such concern for the welfare of others is divine. All those who suffer in the world do so because of their desire for their own happiness. All those happy in the world are so because of their desire for the happiness of others. Why say more? Observe this distinction between the fool who longs for his own advantage and the sage who acts for the advantage of others. For one who fails to exchange his own happiness for the suffering of others, Buddhahood is certainly impossible. How could there even be happiness in cyclic existence? Never mind the next life, even right here and now, the objective of a servant who does not work or of a master who does not pay the wages cannot be achieved. Hey, mind, make the resolve. I am bound to others. From now on, you must have no other concern than the welfare of all beings.